I want to make sure that my actions match my words, meaning I know it's important to value the process and really want to get kids talking about the process and going through the process instead of just getting answers. And so I really want to go when my lesson's happening, I want to make sure that my actions are reflecting that. And I'm not just going straight to, oh, what did you get? What's the answer? So that's what I'm going
through. Have you ever wondered how to ensure your teaching actions align seamlessly with your educational philosophies? How close is your practice to what you preach?
In this episode, we speak with Felicia Favela, a veteran eighth grade pre-algebra teacher from Phoenix, Arizona, who knows that in the realm of education, consistency between what we say and what we do is pivotal, but still wonders how closely she's aligned.
Stick around and you'll hear us uncover the root cause of why Felicia feels that she's not aligned with her philosophies, how to identify when students are primed to progress to new challenges in order to maximize their learning potential, and learn to harness the power of problem-based lessons as a tool for formative assessment to enhance your ability to cater to each individual student's need.
This is another math mentoring episode where we chat with a teacher just like you who is working through some problems of practice, and together we brainstorm ways to overcome them.
Here we go. Welcome to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr. We are from MakeMathMoments.com.
This is the only podcast that coaches you through a six-step plan to grow your mathematics program, whether at the classroom level or at the district level.
And we do that by helping you cultivate, foster your mathematics program like strong, healthy, and balanced tree. So if you master the six parts of an effective mathematics program, the impact of your program will grow and reach far and wide.
Every week, you'll get the insight you need to stop feeling overwhelmed, gain back your confidence, and get back to enjoying the planning and facilitating of your mathematics program for the students or the educators that you serve.
All right, let's dig into this conversation with Felicia Favela. Hey there, Felicia. Thanks so much for joining us on another episode of the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. We're excited to have you. Do us a favor. Fill us in. Where are you coming from? What's your teaching role? And yeah, take it from there.
All right. So I'm currently coming from Phoenix, Arizona. I'm an eighth grade math teacher, pre-algebra. This is my ninth year teaching. I'm almost to that decade mark. And then 7 of my 9 years have been in special education.
Nice. Awesome stuff. Very nice. I love the Phoenix area. John and I were
we were just there.
Phoenix. Well, we were downtown and then we went to Scottsdale and did a little tour over there, and it was fantastic. It was hot. It was fantastic. We can't wait to go back there. But enough about Phoenix, Arizona, and more about you, my friend. We want to know, before we dig in, a question that we ask everyone who joins our show, and this really helps us to kind of almost like set the stage for the episode a little bit. It peers into your mathematical soul a bit, and it is our question around your math moment. When we say mathematics or math class, what pops into your mind? What moment pops into your mind?
It's like stuck with you all this time.
So I listen to your podcast all 200 something episodes.
Oh my gosh. No.
So I knew this question was coming, and I really don't have any memories of high school. Like, I have a favorite math teacher, but nothing pops out. But my math moment was when it was time for me to become highly qualified in math to teach middle school. I failed my test, and I failed it multiple times. And I'm like, wait, maybe I'm not great at math if I can't pass this test. And then after, of course, listening to your podcast and other podcasts, I'm like, maybe I was a good mimicker and I couldn't think my way through a problem in order to get me to pass that test. I did pass it because I'm a teacher, but that's my math moment. And once I got into the classroom, I realized that being able to do math and teach math are completely different.
Absolutely. I think everyone listening probably had at some point, you know, everyone's nodding their heads. And I was going to ask you, and it took everything in me not to interrupt you as you were sharing that moment, but I was so curious when you said nothing really stuck out. And to me, that hits me, because when someone says that, it sort of suggests like it was, and I guess it could be a number of things, but it was either the same every day. There was no sort of like nothing that maybe excited you about it. And to be honest, I've said it on a number of episodes before, so you've heard me say this before, being such an awesome listener, is that my experience, I had some favorite math teachers that were really great people, and they were really good at explaining the mathematics, but in a very procedural way. And again, that's not a judgment by any means, because again, they did a fantastic job given sort of, we'll say, the sandbox that everybody was playing in teaching mathematics. And about the actual math though, like I didn't have too many of those memories either. And it's interesting, like you had said, so I'm curious, I want to know more about your experience when you were writing those tests. And thank you for being vulnerable, by the way, and sharing that you had some difficulties. And I'm wondering, did you experience difficulties prior, like in your K through 12, or did you just kind of zipped along and everything was fine? So it was maybe not even on your radar as something to even think about when you went into writing these tests.
So I don't think there was any difficulty, because I'm like, I'm going to be a teacher. And then I'm like, I was first going to be a kindergarten teacher. And then the first day I stepped foot in my like actual program classes, I'm like, nope, I'm going to be a middle school teacher and I'm going to be a math teacher. But one of our conversations during lunch with my colleagues, I go, I think I was a student that was trapped, because I don't ever remember being pushed for higher classes. That when I graduated, I needed 3 credits and I got my 3 credits, and like, I was never pursued about any higher math classes. And I think that's where my struggles came in when I was taking my highly qualified math test.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. It's like you kind of were pushed in one way, maybe, or not encouraged to go one way. And then it's like now you feel like that may have failed you. I'm curious, Felicia, you kind of hinted at how that experience, I think, influences your classroom now, but maybe can you give us some more insight on that? That clearly is your moment, but what about that moment helps the students? How do you use that moment to help the students that are in your classroom right now?
So my classroom over these 9 years have definitely taken a change probably every year. I'm currently doing a building thinking classroom, and my first early years were special education. So I'm like, I know these kids can do the math. They just need a different way to access the math. And so I always share my story about, I failed multiple times, you guys. It's okay. You just got to get back up.
I dusted myself off. Here we are.
Yeah. You know? It's just knowing that sometimes these tests aren't made just for the algorithm. They're made to see, can you process your way through and think through it and see what they're really asking you.
You know what? I'm actually happy to hear, not that you had to experience it that way, having learned likely very procedurally, and then this test being very different. But I'm happy to hear that that's sort of the bar that we're striving for, right? To go, hey, we want this to be more conceptual. We want more understanding. We want to make sure that people do understand the math. And I'm guessing that the goal is, hey, if you do struggle here, then we'll go back and we'll have to dig through and try to figure out where are the missing pieces that maybe we never experienced along the way. So every process and every experience, it sounds like you're taking it as a opportunity to learn and grow, and you're using it as a way to sort of help motivate students, especially those students who may be struggling along the way, right? And that's a really important thing. So I love to hear that. So thank you for sharing. And let's dig right on here. What is on your mind lately? What are maybe some of the struggles or challenges? We always like to talk about that pebble in your shoe right now. And heck, I'm going to guess we all are listening and saying there's lots of pebbles in our shoes at all times, but which one's sort of the one that you can feel right now? And you're like, that one, man, I really want to get that one out.
Yeah. So it's so funny because again, like I've listened to all your episodes and I'm like, I want to go on the show, but I don't know because everybody else talks about it. And so finally, I'm like, you know, I think I got a pebble that I haven't heard yet.
I think it's hilarious because so many people, I think the same thing. So I'm going to say it right now for everyone listening, that it is so important as well for other people to come on with similar pebbles. And because the conversation will develop differently, and sometimes it lands differently with people too. So that's for everybody that's listening right now. Don't go like, my pebble's not unique. It doesn't have to be a unique pebble.
Conversation over. Sorry.
But I'm happy that yours is unique.
No, we want your unique one. Yeah, Share with us.
So I've really been like, my pebble that I've really been trying to kick out of my shoe and see how I can attack it is, I want to make sure that my actions match my words, meaning I know it's important to value the process and really want to get kids talking about the process and going through the process instead of just getting answers. And so I really want to go when my lesson's happening, I want to make sure that my actions are reflecting that. And I'm not just going straight to, oh, what did you get? What's the answer? So that's what I'm going through, because part of my district is we take, they're called mimics, and they're supposed to mimic our state test. And so this lot, we do three of them a year. And my second one, my students showed growth, but I had low achievement. So I'm like, am I able to show my process, like really value the process, and get my kids at high growth and high achievement?
So paint us a picture, Felicia, like when you're saying, like, how can I make sure my actions match my words? My first wonder is, what makes you think that you're not doing that in the classroom? Paint us a picture of like what classroom looks like. And you're saying you want to put the importance on the value of learning and the process, but tell us a story about why you think this is the case where I didn't do that, or I feel like I might not be.
It's more of a feel than I didn't, because I don't know. So like my day-to-day is like the kids are at the boards and I'm jumping from group to group. And sometimes I feel like when I go to a group, I see the correct answer and I'm like, okay, you got it. But sometimes I question them. I'm like, hey, tell me how you got that. And sometimes I'm like, all right, cool, go to the next one. And so that's where I'm like, I want to make sure I match, like both of them match.
Right. Now, I can definitely relate. My brain goes to a number of things, because not even just in math class, right? There's things I do and I say to my kids when my son and daughter are fighting, and don't do that. Don't yell at each other when you're upset. And then when I'm upset, sometimes I raise my voice, right? And then you're like, ah, I didn't do that. And I think in the math classroom, that can be really easy to happen, especially if those habits, right? We have so many habits that we do, I think naturally as humans, but then also likely how we were taught and then maybe how we did teach for a very long time. I still find it very challenging at times to control my emotions, right? To like kind of stay as neutral as possible, because something that I try to do is I try not to lead a student on to as to whether they are on the right path or not. I'm trying to help them figure out, are they on the right path? And if I go, oh, that's really interesting and I'm very excited about it, then now they know that I'm interested in that. Oh, that might be positive. And if my voice is more like, huh, I don't know why. So I try to use the huh one all the time if I can, but that can be really tough. So it sounds like the example you gave us is, you go to the boards and at sometimes it's like, I want to make sure I'm hearing what you're saying. Are you saying that you feel like maybe you aren't questioning enough consistently, even though you want them to stay curious? Or can you take us a little deeper there? Because your example, you had talked about, hey, great job, now move on to the next one, versus asking them to maybe go deeper or share their process or something more conceptual.
Yeah. So it's more of the share the process, because I noticed I question myself more in my larger classes because there's so many of them and I want to make sure I'm getting to them versus my smaller classes. And it's just like when I get to that group, if I see the correct answer to the problem I'm working on, sometimes I won't be like, tell me how you got that, or tell me what steps you did, or how did you get that? And sometimes if I, especially for my larger classes, I look at it and I'm like, oh, you must know what you're doing because you have the right answer. And so I don't need to take the time to address it, and I can just have you move on to the next maybe challenging problem.
Now, I try to look at this in different aspects. There are different goals to different lessons and different styles of lessons. So when I hear you say, like, I'm doing a thinking classroom style, and when you're saying, I'm moving from board to board, I'm seeing the work that's being done, and it sounds like you've got a series of questions or problems you want them to work through. So my brain is immediately going to say, maybe you've set up a very crafted thin slicing scenario where you're trying to get them to maybe unfold a very important idea that can be done in different stages, where students solve this mini problem, but they have the background knowledge to solve it. And then everyone gets a little tougher or a little bit more complex. And by the end of this very carefully scripted progression of thin slice problems, they've done some complex problems by the end, and also have unveiled the behaviors of some of the mathematics, and maybe you've paused along the way. Is that the type of problem that you're talking about?
Hey, Math Moment Makers, Kyle here, and I've got just a quick message specifically for our district-level mathematics decision makers out there. Do you feel like you're spinning your wheels when making district-level goals for mathematics programming from kindergarten through grade 12? Setting new goals each year only to find little to no real shift in pedagogical practice or educator content knowledge across the district as a whole? Take a moment to book a short call with our team so we can learn more about your specific district and educator learning needs in mathematics so we can assist you in taking the first step of many in the right direction. Visit makemathmoments.com/district to book a web call with our team today. We have a limited number of spots for districts just like yours, so don't wait. Head to makemathmoments.com/district and grab a spot in our calendar now.
Yeah, because after there's certain problems, I won't tell them which ones, but once the group does it, then I'm like, okay, I think you're ready for your check your understanding. And then I send them on their way to do individual work to see if they were able to really understand what that skill or concept was for the day.
Right. So there's problems where that I've done exactly what you're saying, is that I've carefully crafted this sequence. And I find that if I'm getting this group going through that sequence, and when I'm observing them, I'm having conversations with them, and then because it's carefully crafted based off prior work or based off work that we've done, or and each one is modified just a little bit, I always just say, hey, you know what? That's great, because the goal of that particular lesson, in my mind, if we're in sync right now, Felicia, is that the progression itself to get to these certain places, because maybe it's about factoring, or maybe it's about something that's in a way a little bit, you're using different models or strategies, but it's a very particular strategy you're trying to unfold or get to. And sometimes those students just need that feedback, because you're not stopping the thinking, right? This is where this, like, am I right? Am I wrong? You have to ask yourself, am I keeping the thinking going? Because if the student's like, I don't know if I'm right, and by answering it, you feel like thinking is going to stop, then that's the time where you're like, wait a minute. Can I do the like what Kyle's doing? Can you show me a different way? Because if you get that sense that they're not sure, but there's lots of times where I get to a board where with that carefully crafted sequence where they're like, can you check? Because we're ready to go to the next one, right? And they just want that confirmation. And then it's like, yep, move on, because the goal is the thinking through the whole thing. And that for me is a really important move to say, yep, you've got your quick confirmation, keep going. Because by the time we get here, this is where the real thinking is going to happen. And we might pause everyone at this point to make it very clear what our learning goal is, or where we need to go next, or what strategies we took at that moment, because the five problems before that were leading to that one moment. And that moment's the important moment where we pause and reflect and make sure that we're on the same page before we move to the next series. And so I think quick versions of that confirmation are important in those types of lessons. Now, let's contrast that to another type of lesson where we're trying to unfold maybe one particular strategy through a problem-based lesson, which is a little bit bigger, and not, say, this A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, and H gets you to this very nice place. But you're trying to look at different strategies to solve the same problem. And so that's the part where I think I would challenge a little bit more. Can you represent that a little bit more? I'm not sure. Can you convince me a different way? I think there are different styles of problems to do in a thinking classroom. And each one is, it's got its own repertoire of how to go about doing that. Because the question you have to keep in mind is, how do I keep the kid thinking about the things I want them to think about? And that part is like the guiding question. How do I keep that thinking going? Because if I stop the thinking, then that group's like, I'm done. And then it's like, what do I do now? Do I just go to my seat, or do we tie it all together with a bow? That part too, I think, has to be played out. But in the middle of the lesson, I think it's okay. It depends on the type to say, like, yep, I've given you the confirmation to move on. I don't know, Kyle, what do you think?
Yeah, I was going to just add 100%. Everything you've said is really helpful. And you kind of went at it a kind of a slightly different way than where my brain went first. But I think what you said is super helpful in that process, depending on what that goal is. And I'll kind of zoom out and kind of maybe piggyback this a little bit, but I'm going to zoom out to some of the planning that we do ahead of the lesson to really make sure we use the word intentionality a lot on this show. And it's like, if I'm not 100% clear, I say 100, you're never 100% clear. You're doing your best, but you're trying to be intentional about getting to something. And ahead of time, if I can be more intentional, if I can take that even right before the bell rings for class to begin, for me to remind myself of what am I really trying to achieve here, that can also help you create a bit of a filter to determine when do I want a student to tell me more? And when is that actually not necessary today? So John, you kind of alluded to that as well. There's certain, you can see it sometimes and you go, you know what? I heard that student explain something very clearly earlier in the lesson. Maybe it was yesterday, last week, whatever it was. But then there's also the aspect of what is the real learning that we're after? And at what point, what do I need to do to keep the thinking going? Sure. And that might be sometimes keeping the thinking going means getting them onto the next one because they're like kind of done, right? They're done with what they were working on. But then also part of that is to go like, am I confident in what they know, what they can understand, and what they can do? And I use that as my filter in my head to go like, okay, so no is usually like when we see the right answer, right? So I'm like, okay, so like they know how to get an answer. That's good. But like, do they understand it? Right. And then you can look for evidence of that. You might have been listening for evidence of that. And then also, can they actually do it in, when I think of do, it's like they did it, but then are they able to do it in different scenarios? John mentioned the behaviors of the math. So I think using some of these ideas, sort of like a frame to decide when do I want to know more? Which questions, what parts of the questions am I really interested in? And then which ones am I actually potentially causing more harm than good? And what I mean by that is sometimes students get kind of tired of having to always explain everything in depth, right? I'm sure you've been there. I've sometimes overdo it, right? I'm like, well, you got to explain it. You got to explain it. And sometimes they're just like, I don't want to explain it right now. I already did. I explained it to my group. I explained it to you, all of these things. So finding that happy place for yourself. And I think setting yourself maybe that goal, you had come in and basically said, how do I make sure that I do as I say, basically, right? You're like, I want to make sure I do as I say. But then maybe it's like, what am I saying? And maybe I want to reframe what that is. When I say that I'm going to do this thing, thinking classrooms, or I'm going to get my students to think more or show their understanding, is it that they have to do it all the time? Maybe that's too high of a bar. Maybe I've set that bar to a place where I'm going to always be a little disappointed in myself. And like I said, if we look at it from the aspect of, it might actually be appropriate for us to not go as deep on a certain part of a lesson or a task or whatever that string is that they're working on, that there's a little bit of give and take there. And I think as long as we stay aware of what it is we're after and have that goal sort of set for ourselves, and that's going to be a moving target, right? Because every lesson's going to be a little different. But if we do those things, then I think you're going to get closer to fulfilling what you asked today, which is, hey, maybe I have to rethink what is the goal that I'm setting for myself? And can I get to that goal instead of maybe a general goal that in some lessons, it actually doesn't seem like a good idea to actually get there?
We said a lot. What is your thoughts so far?
Everything you guys said makes sense because as you guys were talking, like I'm replaying the most recent situation back in my head. And I think I was focusing on a prerequisite or something that they should already had a foundation for. And so I don't necessarily have to ask them to show me that process for that because they've already demonstrated it sometime previously. And then that just helps them move to the next stage where I do want to know. And then obviously when there's mistakes, there's that conversation that naturally happens. And the more mistakes that there are, the better the conversation that is to be had.
Sure. And this is something else that I think you just nailed too, is that this is the beauty of the style of lessons that we've all, the three of us have at least morphed to, thinking classroom or a problem-based lesson to kick off, is we've argued that these types of lessons are formative assessment gold machines. Like they're just gold, or gold mines, I should have said. They're formative assessment gold mines, because think of when you are interacting with a student of how much you learn about, like what Kyle said, what they know, they don't know, they understand, can they do? You are learning so much. And when I think back to myself prior to doing these types of lessons, my old self, my first year teacher self, when I did the lectures, here's your homework, I knew nothing about what kids could or couldn't do other than the kids that raised their hand to answer questions. And really, they were just probably answering questions about
filling in the blank, right?
Exactly. It was like, well, I need a calculation done here, and I'm going to fake getting some engagement. What's the 3 times 2? Who wants to take that one? I never knew until the quiz happened or the test happened where kids actually were on the learning that we did, unless I was getting in there and helping one-on-one, or kids would come to my desk because I would go sit back down. But when we do these styles lessons, you're learning so much. So why I say that is because when you're at these boards, and it goes to what you just said, it's like when you know these kids and when you know your students, there are going to be kids where you're like, I need more here. And you're going to have kids where you're like, I don't need more here. Because like you said, you've already proved it to me on previous days. I've got that confidence that you know this piece. So I'm not asking you about this piece. I'm asking you about this piece over here, maybe 3 questions down the road if we're doing that type of lesson. But it's all about you trying to figure out that one kid and what you need to know about that one student at that day for the intentionality you're setting for the lesson. If you already know it, you can give them the feedback they need to move on to the next part, or pull that challenging problem out of your pocket when they're at the board to give them that next stage, because they're ready to go to that next stage if they need it. For the students that need that feedback, or you need to like have those deeper conversations with, you're going to those and spending more time with them anyway. So it's about knowing that student and where they are and having the freedom to give different next steps to, and giving different, yep, you're going to move on. But kid over here is like, wait a minute, he got the move on and I have to explain? Well, yeah, because I need to know some of that information. And so that's that freedom to say, we get to differentiate exactly who gets what when we're in those classes.
Hey there, Math Moment Makers. Are you a dedicated listener? Like, I'm talking, have you been listening for a couple months, maybe even a couple years? Well, if you haven't taken a moment to leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform, it would mean so much to us. It'll take you under 1 minute so that you can help more educators see and experience the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. Do us this huge solid. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And here is today's episode.
And I've even had some groups where they're like, nothing's on the board. And they're like, I don't get it. I need help. I'm like, okay, as soon as you put something on the board, I'll be happy to come back, because those kids are also just waiting for me to either spoon feed them or walk them through the process.
Right. And I think if I was to boil down a lot of what was said there, as John mentioned, yeah, we did a lot of talking. We always try to talk less and listen more. And
it doesn't really work on a podcast.
I think it didn't work so well tonight, but that's okay. We're going to forgive ourselves and work on it next time. But what I will say is, as I'm reflecting and I'm thinking about this, you had mentioned about that prerequisite goal, and that you had mentioned the idea that like you didn't have to necessarily ask them to explain. I think this is the tough part of our job, but it's like a good tough, because it's like you always get to make a decision. And really, I think if you are more conscious or more intentional about thinking to yourself is like, do I want to know that information now? Will it help? So it might be, yes, it's going to help me know that they're still on track, or it's going to help because that student, it's going to help lead them to more success in today's lesson, whatever the reason. As long as there's sort of like, if you can ask yourself the question is like, it's worth doing right now because of X, Y, or Z, then I think you're in good shape. Now, there could be the reason why you wouldn't do it. But ultimately, sometimes what we do, because humans, we prefer habit, we prefer kind of following a routine, is we'll set a goal and say, well, when I'm at a whiteboard, I'm going to ask students to blank. And that's the goal. But it's like the reason we set that goal was for another more important reason, which is to keep thinking, to get them to share their work, whatever the reason is. So it's like keeping those things in your mind and just sort of deciding to yourself, like, in this moment, is it better for them to continue on? Or is it better for me to ask them for a little bit more? Do I really want to hear it? Right? Because that's the other thing too, that I think sometimes we can get into this habit of asking kids to share their thinking, but we actually aren't interested in hearing their thinking at that time. Right? But we're like, well, I'm supposed to do it. So it's like, how do I give myself a little bit more of that flexibility in deciding, like, when does it make sense and when is it worth the while? And it's not an easy question to answer all the time, but at least it might give you maybe the next step. It might take maybe the initial pebble out and you might find the other pebble, which is, okay, now I have to decide when does it matter to me? When is this most useful to me? And that might require maybe over this next week, this might be maybe a takeaway or a next step for you is over this next week, like think to yourself, maybe have it on a piece of paper, write it on your hand, whatever you want to just think when you ask. And decide when is it helpful and when is it not? And just to keep track of that for a week and just kind of see, like, how often do I need to ask them? And how often is it actually counterproductive where a student sort of does the old, they feel like they're sort of out of thinking gas? Or when does it actually help them continue thinking or share that and give you more assessment data, like John said? And I wonder if you were to do a little bit more of that tracking, if you can find maybe some, we'll call it like clues that'll help make it easier for you to make those choices when you're on the fly, because that's the hard part of teaching, right? Is that every student's different, every lesson's different, every topic's different, and you're always trying to think on your feet. And we're always trying to insert these sort of like automatics where it's like, when we do this, it's always that. And I think we have to give ourselves a little more grace to say, it's not always going to be like that. And it's never going to be perfect either. So what is the real goal that's going to help me get to where I'm hoping to get to here with this movement that we're making?
And I think, like, well, the way you said it is like, do I need to know this now? And then I was thinking, I'm like, or do I already know it? If I already know it, then I don't need to ask them right now. And that will help. Just really focusing on like the learning target for that lesson is like, I know the end game. So how do I just question them to get them to that end game? If this isn't going to help them get to the end game, to that learning target, then I don't necessarily need to focus on that. And I can move them on to the next one that's going to get them to that learning target for the lesson.
I think you got it. I think you got a big takeaway there too. How do you feel now? And is there anything else that you feel is a big takeaway from today's conversation?
It's just really that focusing in on like, is this a skill that is for the lesson today or is this a prerequisite? And then being intentional of asking myself when I get to each group, do I need to know this or do I already know this? Because if I already know it, then I can move them on and focus in on that. I need to know this piece in order to know you're ready for your check your understanding or the next step.
I love it. That sounds like an awesome, awesome takeaway here. And I think you've given a lot of people something to think about as well. And I think this topic as well, for those listening, can really be applied to a lot of situations in math class, right? So you're talking specifically to this scenario of, say, a thinking classrooms where you're going group to group. You can really apply it in a lot of cases, right? Where sometimes it's, hey, I want my students to do all the thinking. And it's like, so does that mean I never get to teach, right? And there's a lot of these questions that are going on. So I really love it. I'm wondering, thank you again so much for joining us here. Is it okay if maybe we reach out like we have in the past to some of our Math Mentoring Moment episode guests to check in, see where you're at? And hey, I got a funny feeling there'll be a different pebble that you might be working on at that time, but you can give us an update on how things are going.
Absolutely. It's so funny because I got my admin to listen to the podcast too. And so sometimes he'll see me, he's like, what's your pebble now? I'm like, actually, it's a boulder right now, but.
Yeah. I love it. That's Jim Strachan. We always like to give credit where credit's due. Jim Strachan, make sure you listen to that episode, friends, if you haven't yet. And his pebble in the shoe is one that's always stuck with me and so happy to see Math Moment Makers like you are also using that as their little growth opportunity.
Yeah, there was at the beginning of the year, admin always asked me, I go, right now, I'm in a tar pit. I'm trying to get out of this tar pit. I go, and then he's like, why a tar pit? I go, because you know how hard it is to get tar off?
Yeah.
And then he goes, okay. He's like, so what happens when you get off? I go, then my next challenge is getting the tar off of me.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. It's like awesome. I'm free, but I'm not quite free.
Yeah.
Awesome stuff. Felicia, thanks so much for joining us. And we look forward to catching up in a few months.
Sounds great.
Awesome. Thanks so much, my friend. Enjoy and good luck.
Well there, John, what a great episode. It was awesome to hear a story and a challenge that I think a lot of us think about quite a bit. And I don't know about you, John, when I think about the tree and I think about how we do things in our classrooms today, it seems like the problem stems from the area in the branches of the trees. This idea of my pedagogical approach, my philosophy, and I think we uncovered a little bit of what the cause or the root cause of this pebble in the shoe of our guest today. And that is this idea that oftentimes we make choices that we know in general are going to be great, but then we try to stick to them without actually thinking about why that specific choice can help us or maybe hurt our lesson. So something that I think is maybe on her mind here today is this idea that we should be doing certain things all the time, when in reality, what I hope we uncovered here today was the thought that every single lesson has different goals, and throughout or how we reach those goals may look and sound a little bit different each and every day. So thinking about what our big goals are, but then also thinking about what are some of our smaller goals for that day's lesson, and what would be the most appropriate way to approach reaching those goals, I think is something that we really want to be cognizant of, because sometimes we just set a goal and we want to hit them. And when we don't hit them, we're not thinking about the benefit or maybe to the detriment of what happened from doing those actions. We're just thinking, did we do it or did we not? And really here today, I think we really wanted to uncover this idea of that intentionality and really thinking about what specifically do I want to uncover today and what's going to best help me get there. And I don't know, for me, I think that's a really important piece. It's easy to miss in the classroom. I remember feeling this way quite often. And when you really pause and you think about what my goals are, sometimes that might mean adjusting some of the approaches that I've been striving to do more often or more consistently in my classroom.
Yeah, well said. Well said. And I think one of the thing about thinking about the tree, and when we think about the soil, the water, the sunlight, which is our mindset, where our headspace is at, and entrusting that teaching and learning is hard, and teaching and learning takes time, and giving yourself that flexibility, that grace to go, hey, I'm not sure that I'm doing the right thing. I'm using bunny quotes or air quotes here, like the right thing. Am I really aligned to what I'm supposed to be doing? I think we have to give ourselves the grace that it's all about, let's keep those checks in balance. Hey, where am I? Come back and then reevaluate. Where am I? And it's okay that I'm like, I might not be doing exactly what I wanted to be doing, but I'm coming back. And it's about that constant check in with yourself to where you want to go. And I think that is about the soil, the water, the sunlight. That's their mindset being, it's okay of the what we're doing in our classroom, if it's helping our students get to where they need to go. But let's come back and just check to go, where are we supposed to be?
I love it. My friends, if you've got a pebble kicking around in that shoe, head on over to makemathmoments.com/mentor, and you can share your pebble here on this particular episode, and we can dig in and try to shake it free. And something I want to reiterate here is this idea that it doesn't have to be something that has never been touched upon, right? So what are you currently struggling with? And let's work through your specific situation, because the reality is, even though a lot of people have similar pebbles, the context is different, right? The approach is different. The grade level is different. There's so many things that can be different about something that sounds very similar.
Totally.
But it's hitting you and your context very differently. So don't be shy. Head on over to makemathmoments.com/mentor, and we'll be chatting with you on a Math Mentoring Moment episode real soon.
Folks, show notes and links to resources from this episode are found over at makemathmoments.com/episode275. Again, that's makemathmoments.com/episode275.
Well, until next time, I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr.
High fives for us.
And a high five for you. If you are a district leader of mathematics, a math coach, a math curriculum coordinator, a superintendent, and principal, getting teacher buy-in for effective math teaching practice is top of mind. And plans only go so far. You can make, you know, detailed plans and carefully designed goals with clear objectives and key results that are measurable. But that can feel like it all falls flat if we can't engage our teachers in the work. Working with teachers who do not want to change their teaching practices is one of the most frustrating and challenging parts of our job. How do I help teachers engage in effective teaching practices when they keep pushing us away? If you can't reach the tipping point in mass adoption of effective mathematics teaching strategies, then it's likely we won't see student improvement in mathematics. We have a free training an accompanying workbook for leaders of mathematics like you. The Make Math Moments team, myself, John, and Kyle walk you through our four-stage process we use with district partners to create clear, measurable, sustainable PD action plans, but more specifically on how to also get teacher buy-in so that it drives student engagement. So step one, register for this free training, get your planning workbook, and then watch the training. Schedule some time on your calendar so you can watch it and go through the workbook. After completing that workbook, you're going to have a clear, measurable vision, action plan for mathematics to get more teacher buy-in, but also be able to hit your goals for the 2024-2025 school year. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/4 stages to start this free training.